At the start of our worship time this morning, I mentioned that we are in a series called The Good Life, exploring the lives of King David and King Solomon. So far, we have been journeying with David, and we have met him as a shepherd, as a young boy taking care of flocks and being pulled forward early to be anointed at a future time to be the king. We've seen David as a warrior, where he had an opportunity to battle Goliath. And of course, if we were to read more about David's escapades, we see that he becomes quite the warrior, commanding many troops and becoming very famous in battle. Last week, Pastor Paul preached a little bit about that moment in David's life where he made it as king, and the struggles that he had about continuing to trust God and look to God as the source of his wisdom and his direction in life. Today, we meet David as an artist, a poet, a musician. If you were to read through 1 and 2 Samuel, you would see throughout the scriptures that there are many references of David playing music, dancing, and singing. We don't usually think about that as much with David because we tend to think more of David as David versus Goliath or David sitting as a king on the throne. But he had many points where it spoke about his artistic prowess. And so today, we're going to journey a little bit into that element of David's life and the ways that the materials attributed to David in that poetic aspects teach us something, especially about our own pursuit of the good life and what David might have to say to us about that. So, if you are new to the Psalms, I want to just give you a quick little preface because that is most of the literature attributed to kind of David's poetic prowess. And it's there's a lot of scholarly debate about did he actually write them? Were they just attributed to him? We could talk forever about that. There's also some debate about which ones really are attributed to him or not. But conservatively, if you were to go through the book of Psalms, which has 150 poems in it, at least Psalms 3 through 41 and 51 through 72 are attributed to David. So basically, almost the first half of the book of Psalms is attributed to David, either composing that poetry, or you could even more conservatively say, kind of wisdom that was associated with the Davidic kingship, and maybe that point in Israel's history. Now, for those of you who don't like poems, next week won't be a poem. Okay, so I just apologize. Like, sometimes there's certain parts of the Bible that are going to be like fresh air or just something you endure. And that's also part of the gift of Scripture, is there are lots of different ways to encounter God. And David shows us that. We have the historical narratives of David that teach us wisdom, but we also then have these poetic prayers. And I want to take one step back further, too, about the Psalms, because the Psalms in their full construction, all 150 of them, are composed and arranged in such a way where they are also sometimes referred to as a little Bible or a little Torah, because there are five sections of the Psalms, and they follow intentionally the Old Testament salvation stories and kind of the struggles they have. So there is this movement that you'll see of the greater portion of the Old Testament canon represented poetically in the Psalms. And so, of course, with half of them being part of the Davidic kingship, we hear a lot in these Psalms attributed to David the search for what it means to live a good life. Now, in particular, our psalm today talks about a happy life, and we're going to get into that difference of the language of happy, blessed, good, all of that. But before I get into that specifically, I also want to mention really quickly that if you really are interested in kind of moving more into the Psalms, there's a couple of quick pieces that I'd refer to you for your own time of study. One is that the Bible Project has a number of interesting videos attributed for studying the Psalms, and I'll include them in my weekly email. So if you don't get my weekly email, fill out your connection card, and it'll come to your inbox later this week. But also, if you just want to look up Bible Project and Psalms, there's a couple of great videos that will teach you more about the composition of Psalms and some of the wisdom that comes from them. There also is, for those of you who enjoy art and music and poetry a little bit more and really would enjoy reflecting more on the artistic nature of the Psalms versus literary analysis, there is a great video available that I'll also link, which features Eugene Peterson and Bono talking, okay? Yeah, and it was produced by Fuller Seminary. So this is Pastor Paul mentioned Eugene Peterson last week. So here he goes. He's showing up again, but this week with Bono. It's a wonderful video. And so they talk a lot about the artistic nature of the Psalms and the importance of the expression of our emotions to God, which is fantastic and highly recommend to you. And then there are lots of other books and things that I could lift up, but those will definitely get you started, especially if you are just really genuinely interested in kind of exploring your own time of study and prayer with God that is focused more on art versus historical approach, because that's what the Psalms have to offer us. So let's get into one particular psalm today and give you just kind of a taste about the Psalms, the search they have about what it means to live a good life, and kind of the framework of the understanding of the world of the Psalms, if this is something that you feel you're interested in exploring a little bit more for your own spiritual life. The first is, as I mentioned, in our particular translation, which is the Common English Bible that you heard read earlier, it says the truly happy person. So just in case you forgot, that's why I put it up on the board. That's what it says at the beginning of Psalm 1 in the Common English Bible. However, if you were to read another translation, it might say the blessed is the one. And so you can see that scholars have a lot of different thoughts about how to translate this Hebrew phrase. And of course, there's language is limiting, especially when you're moving into English. And so probably a better translation, which I would say comes through the hands of Tim Mackey, is, the good life of a person. So the Psalms are trying to start off on saying, we invite you into exploring the good life of a person. Now, it's important to note, especially for the ancient audiences, that they had certain frameworks they would hear when they heard the word, like, blessed are you. So maybe even when I say blessed are you, you might hear the words of Jesus, like a beatitude. Blessed are those who. And there was this kind of catechetical teaching about blessed are those who. And Jesus wasn't the first to use that. This was part of their Jewish teachings. The Common English Bible uses the word happy because they're trying to differentiate a sense of God pouring out a specific blessing on you versus like, wow, my life is just, this has been amazing how this has been going. So they try and say happy, as in the ancient understanding, especially in the Greek strain with understanding, like for those of you who like Aristotle and all that junk, sorry, that's my husband, is that the key pursuit of life was happiness. But it wasn't a sense, when they use the word happy, this is where it's a problem with our English words, because we tend to refer to happy more as something that just like elicited some sort of pleasurable response, right? Like, woo! And that's why we sing the song, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands, you know. But when they said happy, they were referring more, not so much to a search of pleasure, not so much about a desire to avoid pain, it was really, for them, especially in the ancients, wisdom, it was about seeking a virtuous life, like having a commitment to a life of deep integrity. So this goes beyond the Christian strains. This is, I'm just trying to say, like within kind of pop culture of the day. If they were talking about a happy life, they heard it synonymously with a virtuous life, a life that was grounded to some sort of belief system or wisdom tradition or some kind of connection to something that might involve a lot of discipline and rigor, because it was a way I was going to operate in the world. And that when I was able to like really live in that kind of virtuous life and my life was all aligned, that is when the sense of happiness and bliss and joy emerges. And if you're interested in that side tangent, here's my last book recommendation for you. I highly commend to you, if you're interested in that part, look up Joan Chittister and her book marked Happiness. Or if you're the first one to get to me, I'll lend you my copy because it's in my office. But that gives a much better, thorough analysis of kind of that piece. So here we are. Whether or not you use the word the happy person, the blessed person, or the person with a good life, the Psalms open up a door to us. And they say, and they welcome us to explore finding that road of happiness and goodness in a poetic manner. And instead of giving us a simple set of rules or precepts, they invite us into a symbolic world, a world where we are encouraged to interact with ourselves and with God metaphorically. And so that's why for some people, this is like a love it or leave it sort of thing. Like, again, I'm sorry if this is not your thing. I'm going to be done in like 3 minutes, okay? But for those of you who like this kind of thing, the Psalms give you then the space to move beyond the limitations of language and encounter God through image, which is very timely now because we're definitely a people who are moving more to image-based communication than simply words. But the Psalms, instead of, even though they say the happy person, and they give a number of images right away, right? So we have this image of a happy person who is able to stand and sit, and there's movement. But we hear right away that the happy person is the one who loves the Lord's instructions. And that the word used there is also sometimes translated as Torah. It's meant to be all of the kind of the teachings of the Old Testament and the wisdom tradition that followed. So we have this image of the Psalms are going to provide for us a source of wisdom and instruction, but not through Ten Commandments style teaching, but through image, metaphor, symbols. And they give us two symbols right away for us to consider in our life. And the symbols are a tree and either, depending on your translation, dust or chaff. Many of you might be more familiar with the phrase chaff for Psalm 1. But I'm pretty sure the Common English Bible used dust because not as many of us interact with chaff anymore, unless you're still farming. So we have then these two images. And of course, the psalm says a good life is a life like the tree. A tree that's planted by flowing waters, that's leaves are green and it bears fruit, you know, and everything it does succeeds. And we are given then the beginning of this image. And guess what? This isn't the first time the Bible has used this image. For those of you who have come to church before, I want you to think about if you've ever heard and seen an image of a tree before in the Bible, from the very beginning, right? Because we're at the beginning of the Psalms. And so they intentionally start us with that creation story and the tree of life. And there is this invitation to say, this is accessible to you. This way of being rooted and fed and vibrant is open to you. And they then provide then the counterpoint where they says it could be like a wonderful tree or it could be like the dust. And what really is being put back and forth here, a lot of times we get caught up in the words of like, if you're good or bad, evil, wicked, you know, all these side points. But what it's really saying is your life rooted like this tree? Do you have something that nourishes and sustains you? Do you have something that is providing that source of wisdom, integrity in your life to like help you when time is rough? Or are you just being blown around like dust? Are you just being tossed around like the wind for whatever is coming about in your life? Do you just feel like there's nothing for you to hold on to? And of course, the Psalms say, of course, it's a lot better to be like that tree. And the Psalms give us the opportunity then through the next 149 of them to explore what it means to be rooted in God's instruction. And one of the things I want to mention about this with the Psalms, especially if maybe you haven't spent time reading the Psalms before or aren't really interested in them, is to say that I hope that you do at one point in your life find an interest in reading the Psalms, because if you choose to enter into that kind of journey of reading the Psalms, you'll find a very unintuitive pathway to God that is very different from the narrative structures of the Old Testament. The narrative structures are great because they give you a story and a person you can follow, and you have these opportunities to have kind of moral evaluations about where they succeeded and where they failed. But in the Psalms, they present prayers that have been collected over a long span of time, representing the full range of human emotions. And we are confronted by both the best and the worst of what it means to be human. And we are continually placed in this dialectic pattern where we are called to get out of ourselves and stop just like being stuck in a hamster wheel loop in our brain and gaze upon God and see how that informs our own understandings and our own prayers. And through the Psalms, they will take you through places that a lot of you probably want to censor out and go like, I can't believe that is in the Bible. That is horrible. That language should not be appropriate. Who thought that was a good idea? I don't like what that says. I don't like what that says about, you know, people or what they're asking God to do or, you know, fill in the blanks. But that is the amazing power of the Psalms, is the Psalms are like, it's in there. That's in me. Like the good parts and the bad parts, they're all there. And when I bring them to God in my prayers, and when I stop and pause just long enough to stop talking and to look at God, something happens. And the Psalms, if you're willing to journey with them and let them permeate your life like that flowing river, you may be blessed with an immediate response and feel immediately transformed, and happy are you if that happens to you. Good job. But for most of us, it is like a crock pot It's even slower than a crock pot. It's going to be so slow that you might be even praying it for like 10 to 12 to 20 years before you even feel like anything made a difference. But then eventually you realize that by encountering and praying and journeying with the Psalms, that somewhere you have had a chance for God to speak with you in new and different ways. And I think that's the real brilliance of the Psalms and the prayer book that joins us. And as we seek to figure out what it means to be the good life, the quick one point I want you to remember is that art matters. And expressing ourselves to God fully, uncensored, matters. And allowing God to speak to us in image, in ways that transcend language, matters. Because it is in that multifaceted placement that we are allowed to encounter something bigger than ourselves. We are called to stop and pause and kind of reorganize our sense of being and our posture and our position. And if we give it enough time, we find that there is wisdom that emerges and that there is correction that occurs and that there is hope that is placed before us. And in the journey, we begin to understand how it is possible